G'day countrymen, welcome to Phoenix Rising, the Alec Dumagy Chronicles. I'm Alec Dumagy, enjoy the show.
I'm a rambler, honey, I got traveling in my blood.
G'day countrymen, I'm Alec Dumagy, my name is Judd Bagala. Judd Bagala means the wedge-tail eagle. It was bestowed upon me this name by my uncle Morundu Yana from the Gunglida tribe up in the Gulf of Carpentaria in a little place called Mungabai, better known to the whitefellas as Burketown. Burketown is about 6 hours drive north of a mining town in outback Queensland, an outback Queensland town called Mount Isa. And for those of you playing overseas in Turtle Island over at Canada and America, or even throughout Europe, Mount Isa is the home of the famous Mount Isa Rodeo. It's like the, I guess, the equivalent of the Calgary Stampede over in Canada, in Calgary, or the Cheyenne Frontier Days Rodeo there in Wyoming in America, or Turtle Island, as our native brothers and sisters know it over there. I want to send out some love and a big hello to my nieces and nephews over in New Zealand, the land of the long white cloud, and to my brother Tippy. I love you, my bro. Miss you and hope to see you very, very soon. Thank you for sharing my podcast over throughout New Zealand, and thank you for supporting us. We're gonna have to get you on the show to do a little interview soon. Well, today is a very special episode. This one is titled Sons, and it's all about the sons that I have in my life. And I have many sons, but three of my boys is Seamus, who's in Normandy these days, and my son Zach, the big guy from the famous documentary film Zach's Ceremony. But today, sitting in the studio with me, or sitting in Airstream Dreaming, our Globetrotter, our 1963 American Airstream Globetrotter, all the way from his hometown these days up there in Long Ridge, is my youngest son and one of the other stars of the movie Zach's Ceremony, Bailey Dumagy. Jump on, Bales.
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, yeah.
Pretty big introduction for you. Did you like that?
Yeah, I like that introduction, man.
So tell me, Bailey, how old are you now?
I turned 19 on May the 30th.
May the 30th. That was, what, a month ago?
Yep.
What did you do for your 19th birthday?
I just had fun in my hometown.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So where's home for you these days, Bales?
Barkold, and it's about an hour south from Longreach.
Ah, and what's taking you up to Barkholden?
I'll just work.
Yeah? You
know, I work at the cafe there. And four times a week I go to Long Ridge to work at the airport.
What's the cafe called?
Ridgy Didge.
The Ridgy Didge Cafe. What's important about the Ridgy Didge?
A lady named Cheryl Thompson owns it.
Ah, tell me about Cheryl Thompson. Tell me a little bit. You just heard a laugh in the background. That's because my daughter, Dixie Lou, who you'll probably get to meet later on in life. Now, we could get angry and get upset by all this, but you know what? We're a family, so we're just going to let it flow. So Dixie's in the background hanging out because her brother's just arrived here from Barkholden and she wanted to hang out with him. So she's sitting over in the background on the iPad playing a bit of music. She's playing a game, but I'm pretty sure she'll be jumping in and out of these podcasts as we go along. So you're living in Barkholden. You're working for Sister Cheryl Thompson. Tell me about Cheryl Thompson and what else does Cheryl Thompson do in Barkholden?
Cheryl Thompson, she owns a fair bit of businesses there. She owns the airport at Barkholden and the airport in Longreach.
She owns them?
She owns them.
What, she owns the airport?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. She gets contracted from Qantas and Rex to hire people to work there. So wow. She owns the airport. And she also owns two cafes. I work at both of them, but mainly, I used to work at the Ridgy Didge one, but now mainly I work at the Base Camp one.
Where's the Base Camp? I haven't seen the Base Camp. I've only seen the Ridgy Didge.
No, you've seen the Base Camp when you came up to watch me dance that one time.
At the
Dreaming Center.
Oh, the Dreaming Center. So yeah. She also runs and operates and owns the Dreaming Center.
Yep, and just next to the Dreaming Center is a little cafe that she's just opened up, and I'm the head of the cafe.
Oh, you're the head. And so what do you do with this cafe, Mr. Bailey Dumagy?
Well, right now I've been setting it up so it's like, you know, nice enough for people to come in. And so we just opened it up about 2 weeks ago.
Is it operating? It's open?
Yeah.
What's your specialty at this cafe?
Coffees.
What kind of coffees?
Oh, my specialty, making coffees?
You're a terrible interviewee. Yeah, come on. Tell me about your coffee making skills. Because I hear you big note and you crack all the time about how great you are at making coffee.
Yeah, that's because it's true. My best coffee I make is probably a cappuccino because it's just simple and I like putting the chocolate on top.
Well, I'll be the judge of that because I'm a coffee connoisseur, you know. That's my thing. It's what I like to do is drink good coffee. So your best coffee, you're saying, is a cappuccino?
Yep.
What's the difference between a cappuccino and a flat white?
Flat white has far less froth and it doesn't have any chocolate on top.
Damn. I thought a flat white was just a flat white fillet you ran over. Hey, there's a laugh button. Where is that? Which is that? let me do that again. That's gone a bit too long.
Say the joke again. We'll do this one.
I thought a flat white was a white fillet that you ran over. Yeah, that's pretty good. So Bailey and I discovered that my little podcast equipment has all these little cool little doobalackies on it, like, and. So throughout our interview and throughout our chat, we're going to play with this and have a bit of fun. What do you think?
Yeah, I reckon it's going to be good fun.
So back to Sister Cheryl Thompson. How did this come about that you traveled almost 2,000 miles from obviously your home down here in Brisbane to go and work up there with Sister Cheryl? And obviously she has a big legacy in the town. There's a lot of not been said nor written about it. How did that come about? How did that happen?
So the way that happened was me and you we're on our way down from Doomadgee, and we was in Longreach, and you set it up for me.
Oh, so you're dad? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, I guess.
I mean, if I'm going to take credit for it, I'll take some credit.
Yeah, I guess dad played a little part in me getting a job up there, a house even.
Oh, you know, I got to do what I got to do. I guess it's because I'm not saying I'm the best dad, but I'm the best dad. Yeah. You like that one?
Yeah.
So Let me tell the story how it really happened. 2019, my wife Amy and I and our two baby girls, your two little sister, we're heading up to Burketown for our festival that we created called the Gulf Country Frontier Days Festival. And a brother reached out to me and said, if you're coming to Barkholder, you must meet Sister Cheryl. She's she loves the stuff you're doing. You'd get on really well with her. Please drop in and see us. So we stopped in and we spent the night there and we you know got to meet Cheryl and we got to learn a little bit about what she does in the community and the empowerment she's doing for Aboriginal people. And this is an Aboriginal woman who's an entrepreneur. You know, an entrepreneur, that's pretty cool to be living and working in an outback Queensland town. You got to remember, Queensland is regarded as the deep south. So for all our American mob, Queensland is kind of like the racist state, I guess. Well, I mean, the entire country is pretty much a racist country. But what I'm saying is Queensland has this reputation as being like the deep south of Australia, mainly because back in the 70s and 80s, there was a politician by the name of Joe Bjelke-Petersen who was the Premier of Queensland, and he ruled it with a really pretty iron fist. And he was the former head of the Queensland Police Service, so you can only imagine what kind of a man he was towards Aboriginal mob. That being said, back to the positive stuff. Sister Cheryl, we get to meet her, we get to hang out with her. We immediately fall in love with her and everything she's doing in the community up there at Barkholder, and not just Barkholder, but surrounding areas as well. I mean, over at Longreach is very well, I guess, respected and involved in business over there, and Winton. I mean, that whole sort of middle of Queensland stretch, she's pretty well loved and well liked and respected amongst the business world up there, and she's worked over many years to break that mold. Anyway, the story goes is when we were up in Doomadgee, I spoke to Bailey about, at this stage, Bailey had just graduated from Toowoomba Grammar, didn't you?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
So 2019.
Was it 19 or 18? Well,
hey, I'm pretty sure it was 2019 is when I graduated.
Really?
Was it this 19? All happened in 2020.
No.
This was last year.
No, you're wrong because 2020 was COVID and we couldn't go anywhere. This happened in 2019 and you graduated in 2018.
No, I'm 100% sure I know when I graduated.
Trust me, dude. Trust me, this happened in 2019. You were up there working for her in 2020.
Yeah, I know.
That's you graduated right. In 2018.
No, I didn't. I would have been 16.
I bet you.
I graduated when I was 17 in 2019.
What can I bet you?
Bet me Bluey. No.
I'm going to bet you something. I'm going to bet you $50. Hang on. I'm about to sneeze. Almost stopped. I'm going to bet you $50 that you graduated in 2019.
No, you said 18 before.
And you started working for Cheryl in 2020.
That's what I've been saying. So Was that $50?
Anyway, back to when I met Cheryl for the first time in 2019 when I was heading up there. And it was for the festival, and we spoke a lot about what she was doing. On the way back, we spent some more time with her because we were talking about possibly doing a festival in Barcolden or Longridge. And I said, you know, my son Zach's looking for work, and Zach drove up that year, and he had – was you in the car with Zach, or did you fly?
No, I didn't go up that year.
You sure?
Because this was 2018.
I'm talking 2019.
2019 was
– now you're confusing me. Anyway, back to how I met Cheryl. It was 2019. On the way back, we stopped in with Cheryl. We spoke to her about the possibility of maybe Zach working for her. Zach had another nephew from the Ewan mob down there in Narra by the name of Lukey McLeod. Lukey McLeod Ebsworth, who's a young nephew of ours. He dances for the Dunwich Dancers. He's brother Bobby McLeod's grandson. And he ended up getting work there with Cheryl and settling down and becoming part of her dance group and doing stuff at the Dreamtime Center. So, Bailey graduates in 2019 from Toowoomba Grammar. You want to tell the story how we arrived at your graduation? Because I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, well, I didn't really know what vehicle I was going to show up in. And then I think it was not even a couple of days before formal. Dad's like, "We're going on the Harley." And I was like, "Oh, my God."
Pretty cool dad, right? Like, I mean, come on, I'm a pretty cool dad. Like, come on.
He's all right.
I mean, we rolled up to his graduation on a Harley, man, a Harley Davidson, like Softail Heritage, decked out, you know, conchos. Like, it's just, it's my black beauty. It's my baby. And So we rock up to your graduation on a Harley. Everyone's looking. Everyone's like, he's this Aboriginal kid that against the odds graduated from one of the most prestigious private schools in Toowoomba, Toowoomba Grammar. And he's rocking up to his graduation with his Aboriginal activist crazy dad on a Harley. Ain't that some cool shit? Like, well, that was pretty cool, right?
That was probably highlight of my year.
Really? Oh, thank you very much. I mean, I do to please, you know. So you graduate 2019. Now I remember. Let me just take this back. Okay, so you won the $50. I mean, you owe me like $1,000 anyway, but you know. I mean, you can maybe take it off my bill. So 2020, we head up to Doomadgee for my sister's funeral, your auntie, which we spoke about in the Adele Effect. My sister Adele died last year due to systemic racism, institutionalized racism in the Queensland health system and the Doomadgee Aboriginal Community Hospital. And we went up to bury her, I remember. And I remember speaking to you about, you know, the possibility of going to Barcolden and working for Sister Cheryl. And I think, were you in the car with us, didn't you? You drove back in the car with us because you had your little dog with us, Bitter.
Yeah. This is when I picked up Bitter. You actually mentioned this to me in Longridge. You said, "I've got a job opportunity for you an hour away in Barcolden." And I was like, "Oh, like what, in a couple of months?" And he's like, "Well, the bus leaves in about 3 hours."
So we're driving back from Doomadgee, which is up, like I said, you know, 5-6 hours north of Mount Isa, up near Burketown. And Bailey at this stage was kind of umming yarring on what he should be doing, where he should be. He didn't really have a bit of a plan. Like, after he graduated from high school in 2019, he didn't know what he wanted to do or where he was going to go. And I was trying to convince him, because Bailey's actually, I got to say, he's actually a really good actor. He's got a natural knack for acting. He knows how to remember scripts. And I was trying to convince him to join ACPA in Brisbane. Now, ACPA was set up by Sister Leah Purcell and some of the mob. I think Wesley Enoch might have been involved as well. If you don't know who these people are for our mob overseas, Leah Purcell is a powerful force of a woman, and she's about to drop her first ever feature film called The Drover's Wife. And she's written this film, she's directed this film, and she stars in it. Leah and I starred together in a TV series called Red Fern Now back in 2012, and I starred as Leah's husband in there. It was just such an amazing honor to work opposite this woman, and I'm very privileged that I still have her in my life as a sister, and her husband, Brother Bain. Hopefully we're going to do some work together. I'm kind of going off track here, but during that Red Fern Now series, Bailey also starred in that series. You got selected to star in, I think, episode 3 or 4, where you played Deborah Mailman's son. Tell me about that experience.
It was actually, like, because I don't really know much. I didn't.
You
really
can't remember it, can you? You can't.
No, I was pretty young, and
you
I didn't know.
Eight or something.
I didn't know who. I know it sounds crazy. I did not know who Deborah Mailman was, and Dad was like, "How could you not know who that is?" And then he was trying to explain all these movies where she's from, and then the one that he explained was Australia, and I was like, "Oh, her."
Like Deborah's like again for all. I went off track here because I was trying to explain who Leah Purcell was to all our listeners overseas. Why was I doing? Oh, Akbar. I was trying to talk about Akbar.
Akbar. Oh, yeah.
So okay. So Deborah Mailman is also like maybe a Jennifer Hudson over in the States. Great actress. She's Bush. She's from Manizer as well. She's Uncle Wally Mailman. Uncle Wally was a great cowboy from the. I'm going off track again.
Akbar.
Back to Akbar. So Akbar is called the Aboriginal Performing Center. Aboriginal
Center for Performing Arts.
Yes, Aboriginal Center for Performing Arts, and was set up by Deborah and a few others. Wesley, you know, I was trying to convince Bailey to join Akbar so he could work on his acting skills because I believe this young man has natural ability to be one of our best actors in this country. When he was, how old were you in 2012? You would have been
10.
You're 10. When he was 10 years old, out of the blue, he got plucked from obscurity by Cate Blanchett to star in a play, a stage play with the Sydney Theatre Company called Secret River. And he was on stage with, you know, some of our biggest names in the acting world, like Bruce Spence. Like
Miranda Tapsell.
She was in that as well. Ursula Jovich. Like Ursula starred in Australia, but Bruce Spence, right?
Oh.
This is like this guy that when he was on a kid, he was 10, and I'm like, Bailey, you're on stage with Bruce Spence. You know who that is? And he's like, no. I'm like, dude, that's the gyro helicopter dude from Mad Max. Like, that is Bruce Spence.
How about just out of the blue, after one of the performances, some random guy walks up to me and congratulates me on doing an amazing job. I didn't know who he was. Apparently, he's a big deal.
He was, and he still is. It was the agent from The Matrix, the one and only Hugo Weaving. I got a photo of that and put it up on Facebook. So you still got that. So Bailey was rubbing shoulders when he was 10 years old with some of the biggest stars in Australia, including Cate Blanchett, Hugo Weaving. You know, Hugo is a big deal over in America. Since those Matrix films taken off, he's in everything and all over the place. But Bruce Spence, like, that was my childhood, watching Mad Max and seeing Bruce Spence, the gyro helicopter dude. And for you kids out there, I shouldn't say kids, I'd probably say mid-20s now because your mob would have watched this. If you've seen Finding Nemo, which was a big deal, and I've just introduced my daughter Dixie and Bella to it, Bruce plays the shark in there. So that's Bruce Spence. He's a big deal if you're voicing the shark in Finding Nemo, right? Come on.
Yep. That's what got me, and I was like, oh, my goodness.
I said to Bailey, that's Bruce Spence. He's like, who's that? I'm like, from Mad Max. He's like, well, Mad who? Well, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, he's the shark from Finding Nemo. And Bailey was like, what? I'm on stage acting with the shark from Finding Nemo. Are you kidding me? It was funny. It was really funny to see Bailey's eyes light up. I remember going through all the pain. I was working at the Opera House at the time with Rhoda Roberts doing the Indigenous programming at the Opera House, and I was trying to create a Benelong walk around the Opera House. And every day I had to walk you from Customs House in Circular Quay. We'd get on the train to Customs House. I'd walk you down, take you to Sydney Theatre Company so you can do your rehearsals all day. Then I'd rush back to work, and then I'd come there in the afternoon and pick you up. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
You remember that. You were 10 years old. And you had long hair back then, your long, beautiful curls. And it was one of the best times of my life to see my young son do that. And I remember opening night. This is the one thing I want to say. And this is to any of you fathers out there, and mothers for that matter. When you see your child achieve something so great and so big when they're only 10 years old, it blows your mind. So opening night, Sydney Theatre Company does Secret River, and Bailey Doomage is on stage. And wait for it. Bailey all of his appearance, his entire dialogue is the Darug language. Now, it's a different Aboriginal dialect from in Sydney, the Sydney Basin. So Bailey, at 10 years old, had to learn a different dialect, a whole different language to perform this, what, two-hour play?
Nearly
3 hours. So watching my son on stage talk in a different language and being up there with, Bruce Spence, with Jeremy Sims. Jeremy Sims, I love Jeremy Sims, great actor but an amazing director. Love Jeremy. Ursula Jovich, Miranda Tapsell.
I forgot his name. Jack.
Jack. Charles? Uncle Jack?
He was in there for two of the plays and then...
Old Uncle Jack Charles. The legendary Uncle Jack Charles. Amazing. So opening night, I'm watching this and I'm bawling my eyes. I'm crying the whole time. Every time Bailey's on stage, I'm just absolutely crying. And if you've seen the stage play, there's a scene in there where the kids, so Bailey's 10 years old, where they get shot, they get killed. You remember that scene?
Yeah, we had to, we had to walk out with blood capsules in our mouths. No, it wasn't, we didn't get shot, the water got poisoned.
Something happened, but you die on stage.
Yeah, and I had to, it was the hardest, 5 minutes of my life. I had to lay still, and, I was 10 years old. I wanted to get up and, run around and whatnot, so.
I got to tell you, that was probably the toughest and hardest thing. As a dad, watching you on stage and seeing you get, I guess, that scene where you die on stage, it absolutely blew me away. And to this day, it still makes me cry thinking about it. Watching my 10-year-old son in his power, in his glory, up on stage performing, and you die in front of at least, 300 people in the audience?
Yeah, something like that.
And some of the biggest names in Hollywood, Cate Blanchett, Hugo Weaving, these are Academy Award-winning people. How was it working for them? How did you feel working for Cate? Because she wrote this, she adapted that to the stage.
I guess my young age was played a big part in why I was so calm, because I really didn't know who they were. They weren't a big deal to me. Sorry if they're hearing this, but. Yeah.
Cate Blanchett, you wasn't a big deal to my son. He didn't really care who you were. He just learned how to speak
the
Darug. At the time, he was too busy just learning how to speak the Darug language.
Yeah, pretty much.
Tell me, actually, one thing that I remember was that you learned to speak the Darug language from a deadly brother of mine who I really admire and respect, a great actor, one of the best Aboriginal actors I've ever seen, called Richard Green. Tell me about Uncle Richard Green and I guess your time working with him.
I can't really remember too much, but I do know that he was super energetic, and that helped with me learning a completely different language, because I'm not even fluent in my own Aboriginal language. So yeah.
You want to see a great acting performance in Australia? A great acting performance? There's a film called Boxing Day, and believe it or not, this film stars Richard Green in the lead role, and it's a one-shot film. So the film camera follows him the whole way through the entire film. I think it's for an hour or whatever it is, and it's a one-shot film. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's brilliant. He's an amazing actor. And there's another film about a serial killer down in Adelaide. What's it called? And it's about where the serial killer was putting people into these barrels. I think it's called, I can't remember. But in that film, believe it or not, Richard Green plays this cross-dressing drag queen. And he is brilliant. It's Academy Award-winning stuff when you see him. So he's one of the best actors I've ever seen. And if you're listening, Brother Richard, thank you for teaching my son the Darug language from out in that. The Darug mob up near around Parramatta, up near Parramatta, they call it. But, Richard. Thank you for supporting Bailey with his time there at the Sydney Theatre Company. Again, I'm going off track here, but I'm trying to tell our listeners, our mob out there, about trying to push you into this world of acting at ACPA. What, I guess, because that wasn't the only acting thing. You did Secret River on stage. You got Redfern Now. But before that, you were on a ABC show called My Place with your sister Brooklyn. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember the episode, but it was Barangaroo, it was called.
Yeah, it was something about Barangaroo. So Brooklyn played Barangaroo.
And I played a character named Mung, which in their language meant ant.
Really?
Yeah.
And Mung was her little sidekick.
Yeah, because, yeah.
So if your mob don't know who Barangaroo is, what are you laughing at? Nothing. What's funny?
No, just my response before didn't make any sense.
Say your response again.
I said, yeah, and.
So back to My Place. Brooklyn played Barangaroo, who was, believe it or not, the wife or one of the wives of the great Bennelong, and she was a warrior woman. But Brooklyn played her at 10 years old, and you played her little sidekick, Mung, at about 8 years old. You were 8 years old. That was like 2008 10. Or 9.
That would have been 2010.
2010. Wow. So you've been in front of a camera since you were eight years old. So you had this natural knack for acting. Why, in all your wisdom, did you not listen to your dad in 2020 and take up the opportunity to go and be a part of ACPA? You going to tell me why?
I really don't have a response for that question.
Or is it because you don't want to act?
I do want to act. I love it. It's just at the time I didn't really want to.
Do you still want to do acting now?
Yeah, I do.
Have you auditioned for any parts lately?
You did send me one for, what was it, Mystery Road?
The Mystery Road TV series to star in with Aaron Pedersen. Like, that's a big deal. Come on, man. Did you even send in a... You didn't, did you?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. Like Bailey. You mean you didn't even do a self-test and send it in?
Nope.
See, this is what I'm going to put up with. See, you mob? This is what sons are about. Sons are about disappointing you. Sons are about breaking your hearts. Sons are about never following through with when you give them something to have a go at.
I still have my job. Both of them.
Big deal. Come on, whatever.
All three of my jobs.
So my son Bailey currently lives and works in Barcaldine. He works with Sister Cheryl Thompson up there. He does. How many jobs do you do?
Well, I work at two cafes at the airport, and occasionally I just do the dancing for her.
So you perform cultural Aboriginal dancing at the Dreamtime Centre in Barcaldine as well?
Yeah, twice a week.
Wow. So you've really set yourself up. And Let's backtrack a bit, because you mentioned the word bitter earlier. Who is bitter, and what does bitter mean to you, and what does bitter mean, the word bitter?
So bitter is my one-year-old and three-month puppy.
Yeah. He's a pretty big puppy.
Yeah, he's a pretty big puppy. He's a pit bull.
That your Uncle Garrick gave you in Doomadgee last year, yeah?
Yes.
He's a pit bull. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he's a pit bull.
Oh, well, the mum is a purebred pit bull, and wow. I don't know what the dad is.
He looks like something bigger, like a big...
Bull Mastiff
or a...
No, he doesn't have the height.
He's a big dog. What's some other big dogs? You got Bull Mastiff, you got...
Bull.
Oh, what's the ones like Snoop Dogg has on his covers? What are they called? Great Dane?
No.
Anyway, he's a beautiful dog. So Bitter is Bailey's sidekick up there at Barcaldine, and he was only a little pup when we drove back from Doomadgee last year. And I remember you did, it was last year, 2020, when you got your job. Unbeknownst to Bailey, I was already talking to Sister Cheryl about him, and I said, look, I'm not sure what he wants to do. He doesn't want to do acting at the moment, but maybe if he lives up here and find his feet and be away from dad and be away from his family, he can kind of figure out what he wants to do. And I had the chat with Bailey, and I said, yeah, there's an opportunity to do a job. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, when does he start? I'm like, well, you got to get on a bus in about 3 hours and go on the road to Auntie Cheryl. And I said to Cheryl, I remember saying to Cheryl, I said, sister, you're going to fall in love with him and you will not want to let him go. When he got down to Barcaldine, I stayed in Longridge for a bit because I was doing some filming around, you know, finding my white man dad in Longridge. And the next day she rang me and she goes, I'm never letting him go. I love him. He's my nephew and he's staying here with me forever. So they already claimed him. By the time I got to Barcaldine, he was already with the aunties and cooking up a storm in the Ridgey Ditch Cafe. Tell me about your little community in Barcaldine. What makes it special? What makes it unique there?
I guess the thing that makes it unique there is just everyone, like, I'm not boasting or nothing, but pretty much everyone likes me there. Like, you know.
What's not to like about you, though? You're very likable. You're very lovable.
I guess, huh?
Tell me.
We were talking about Bitter.
Yeah.
We're sidetracked again.
Okay, Bitter. Right. So Bitter's your dog. Yeah, we already got over that. He's pretty big now.
I didn't explain what it means.
Well, come on. Tell me. What does Bitter mean, and where did you get the name from?
So Bitter, that's his nickname. His real name is Bitterer.
Bitterer.
Yeah, and I saw him laying next to a rock.
A big rock?
Big rock, a little, like a round, like nice and weathered rock. Mm-hmm. And I asked Nana.
So this is this is my mother, Yala Gunjimara. Because we did a show with her recently. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
It's brilliant, right? So my mother, Yala Gunjimara, is his Nana. So you asked Nana, yeah?
Yeah, I asked her, first I was asking her, what are some good names? And she was like, Budgingun, and that means dingo.
Budgingun means dingo, yeah, it means dog.
And But then I saw him laying next to a rock that was the exact same shape and color as him,
mm-hmm.
like the same size and everything. And I just asked her, what's the name of that rock? And she said, Bitterer.
So Bitterer. So his name is Bitter because of Bitterer.
Bitterer, yeah.
Good name. I like it. Have you always loved animals? Because all of your life as a kid, we'd never had animals. We never had any dogs except Django. Django came into our life when you was, 2013. How old were you?
2013, I would have been 11.
11, because straight after you went through ceremony, that's when Django came into your life.
From Roma, yeah?
From Roma. He was only two, 3 weeks old when we found him. So anyway, but then, so now you got your own dog. You're living in Barkholden.
I don't really like animals. I just love Bitter.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. How can you, so you don't like animals, but you like Bitter?
Because he's mine. He's my son, you know?
Does he answer you? Dad, how does he talk?
For a big dog, he's got a very high-pitched voice.
Hang on. Does he go, Daddy?
Oh, my God.
Oh. I mean, is he a hard dog because he's in this rock?
Not wrong one.
Is he a rough dog because he's a rock? Sorry, I'm going to be here all night. Back to our story. So you've been out there for a year now.
A year coming August. August, I'll be out there a year.
So you do the Qantas baggage stuff. Is it baggage handling and
yep.
and what else? Do you guide the plane in or no?
For Rex, because I work at Rex and Long Ridge.
So Rex is the Outback smaller airlines, not Qantas. But for all our American listeners, or from Turtle Island, even throughout Europe, if you're listening in Europe, Qantas is the home. Long Ridge is the home of Qantas. Qantas stands for the Queensland and Northern Territory Air Service. And last year in Long Ridge was the 100-year anniversary of the establishment of Qantas. That must have been a big year for you. Did you do anything special out there?
I didn't even know that that's what Qantas meant. You just said that. But.
And you work at Qantas every day. You're right beside the museum. Go in and have a look, dude, and have a listen.
Yeah, but they did have the 100 year was last year, yes, but they celebrated it this year because last year was,
COVID. Everyone knows what COVID is. COVID-19 hits. A lot of the celebrations had to be cancelled. One of the things they did at Qantas that I remember was they did this screen show where they put, footage up aside on site. There's a big 747. It's a big jumbo jet out at Qantas. And it's a museum and you can go to ride or you can go for walks on it and take tours on it. But last year they did this it was a light show and they put footage up. Like it was old footage of Qantas. It was brilliant. And I didn't get to see it because you have to book in. And Amy, my wife and I, we wanted to go along, but we couldn't. It was all booked out for the time we were there. You know if they're still doing that?
They still do the projecting up onto the
projecting.
The plane.
That's the right. Yeah, they projectors. Yeah.
They do that. But I remember when that when the whole 100-year festival thingy that they were doing was going on, they had one of my coworkers dress up as an old style stewardess,
mm-hmm.
and that was pretty cool, I guess.
One thing that I like about the Qantas planes is one of them. Is this famous, it's not a 747, it's a smaller one. It's in a 707 or something. But it's the same one that John Travolta flies. So John Travolta is an ambassador for Qantas. And the same plane that he has, this one is there as well. And they found it in a old plane graveyard over in Dublin. Now, this plane has a real crazy history, right? That plane there, the one that there. It was after Qantas had it in service, it got sold to this Arab Sheik or whatever, like this multi-billionaire that fitted it out with gold and everything. It looks amazing inside. Then in the 80s, this guy wanted to sell it. And at the time, a pop star called Michael Jackson wanted to buy it. So he jumped in his plane, took it for a ride, and was about to buy it off this Arab Sheik or this multi-millionaire billionaire from over in Saudi Arabia or wherever it was. And for some reason at that point, they changed laws around the jet engine. So this new engine came in, so then Michael didn't want to buy it no more. So then it just got scrapped over in Dublin somewhere, but it had all these amazing fittings in it with gold trim and, yeah. And anyway, long story short is that when they went and salvaged it and did it up to fly it back to Australia, the Qantas pilot that flew it, he pulled in to see John Travolta in Florida and landed it on John Travolta's airport. And because that plane, that was number one, there was only ever 13 of these planes made. The one in Longridge is number one, and number 13, guess what number 13 is? John Travolta's plane.
Oh.
So they landed it beside number 13 and number one, and they got a photo of John Travolta and this pilot with the number one plane and the number 13 plane. Anyway, they flew it back to Longridge, and that's where it sits now. So you work beside this plane every day. You should actually go in and take the tour and listen. It's actually amazing. Dixie and I went on it.
Well, looks like I don't even need to pay for the tour. I got a pretty good tour guide right here.
Tell our listeners what your nickname for me is.
Oh, Dougal, Dumaji Google. He knows everything.
I know, right? Well, you know, when you work in radio, you got to know your stuff, bro. That's just the way it is. Gee, time's flown by. It's like we've been talking for almost half an hour.
We said 20 minutes.
I know, but we just keep talking. Is there anything you want to let me know about? I mean, do you love it in Barcolin? Do you love working? What's your favorite job out of the three jobs you do? Or you love them all?
Our favorite job out of the three.
Well, hang on. There's more than three. You do Qantas. You do Rigidit Cafe. Well, same thing, Rex and Qantas, the plane stuff. So you do the plane stuff. You do the Rigidit Cafe. You do the new, what's the name of the new cafe?
Oh, it's just Basecamp Cafe.
Basecamp Cafe. And you do dancing at the Dreamtime Center for Sister Cheryl. What's your favorite?
Oh, sometimes I'm also a bus boy for my friend's pub.
What's a bus boy?
I think that's what it's called when you get – I'm not allowed to serve alcohol because I don't have my RSA, but I'm allowed to go and –
clean
grab cups. Yeah, just cleaning and whatnot.
Is that a busboy?
I think that's what they call
it. I thought that may be a servant or a domestic.
No.
Could be a slave.
Yeah.
You look like a slave.
No.
You know my son here? I haven't seen him, how long?
March.
March.
Birthday.
March? Yeah. Oh, you came there for my birthday?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, and I haven't seen him in almost 3-4 months, but we haven't spoken in the last couple of months because I've just been too busy. So you just came in today on the bus. I'm so happy you're here. You're here for your friend's birthday in Toowoomba?
Yes, tomorrow night.
How old is he turning?
20.
He's 2 years old. Is he older?
20.
Really?
Okay. 19.
Well, I'll tell you what. Thank you for joining me here on the Alec Dumaji Chronicles, Phoenix Rising, the Alec Dumaji Chronicles. Would you come back and we do a part two to this episode, Sons? Would you come back and have another chat with me?
100%.
100%. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. That's the episode, Sons. That's part one. We'll get Bailey Dumaji back again and have a chat with him at another time. You all take care and have fun. We're going to send you out with a great track here. I like this song. This one's from a brother by the name of Briggs. Now, Briggs comes from down there in Shepparton in Victoria. He's a rapper. He's so cool. And he does a lot of touring, but he's also a comedian. He's an actor. But I just love this song. This is... And the reason I'm playing this is because are you the bad apple in our family? Are you a bad apple, or is that Zach the bad apple, or is Seamus the bad apple? Who's the bad apple out of you boys?
All three of us, I reckon.
Ah, well, here's to my three sons. This is Bad Apples from Brother Briggs. Take care. Love you, mob. Phoenix Rising, the Alec Dumaji Chronicles, baby, coming at you. Sign up, subscribe. Boom.
They gone from stealing bikes to stealing lives. So many young hands grip a stainless steel knife. See a kid they don't like, they're messing him up. What's wrong or what's right is giving less of a fuck. Sticking them up, left, right, stitching them up. Everything revolves around getting the cut. Middle fingers up, fisticuffs, pissing it up. Before the pen license, fisting the cuffs. They don't use them to pack shells, they use them to pack cells. Up in the system before they even crack 12. You can paint a pretty picture using northern pastels, but it's black and white and the ladder still sells. What kind of life is that? They're getting born in town. Teacher can't reach them, I'm getting fucking bored of that. They couldn't spell the name off the bat. I bet you they can tell you where to score a quarter at. They're growing up fast, they're growing up tough. They're giving back everything they never got as a pup. And if they want something, you're giving it up. If they want something, you're giving it up. They're growing up fast, they're growing up tough. They're giving back everything they never got as a pup. And if they want something, something, you're giving it up. If they want something, you're giving it up. They say one bad apple can spoil a whole bunch. What if all you had was bad apples for lunch? What if all you had was all you could touch? And what if before you even had a dream you were crushed? They weren't raised wrong, they weren't raised at all. You watched the bell break and watched the cradle fall. And now you're surprised when the baby talks and he's asking, what the fuck are you staring for? Where their mothers, huh? Where's their fathers, huh? Here they come with all that fucking drama, bruh. Before you fix them, there's another one. And the problem's tenfold and the learning trick's younger, cuz what you want ain't always what you get. Sometimes what you get is like a kick to the head. I guess you can chalk it up to cause and effect, but the core is all rotten and they gotta be fed. They're growing up fast, they're growing up tough. They're giving back everything they never got as a pup. And if they want something, you're giving it up. If they want something, you're giving it up. Like, growing up fast, they're growing up tough. They're giving back everything they never got as a pup. And if they want something, you're giving it up. If they want something, you're giving it up. It ain't worth it, who cursed it? Point the fingers at the ones who birthed it. Brought to earth a brand new person. The same ones that called them all worthless and called them good for nothing. I call them cousin, I call them brother and sister, I still love them. Brother and sister, I still love them. Brother and sister, I still love them.